Ooh, I'm gonna sneeze.
Still not sneezing.
Excuse me.
Hold on a second. I think the shockwave is about to hit New York.
Hey, happy Tuesday, everyone. It is On Taking Pictures, episode 78. 78, almost 80. We're here each and every week. We're talking about, well, I guess photography a little bit. We squeeze in photography every now and again.
It comes up. Right?
It comes up. Yeah. It's a topic.
Yeah.
My name is Jeffrey Sidoris from fadeandblurred.com. And with me, the soda streamy fancy pants, Mr. Bill Wadman.
I'm actually drinking Coke this morning.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Like Coca-Cola?
Like the good stuff.
Not SodaStream Coca-Cola?
No, I never make SodaStream Cola. I just make the SodaStream fizzy water. But I am drinking some Coke this morning because I need a little caffeine and a little sugar to get myself
I don't know. After last week.
What happened last week? Were we really in rare form that everyone says that we were?
What did Freddie write? Freddie wrote something on the group. It was pretty funny.
Oh, right, that we like hot nuns. It's true. Some nuns are hot. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Hey, on Sunday night,
yes.
I met up with a couple of listeners, a few listeners here in New York City.
That is pretty cool. You told me about that.
Yeah, we went and had some barbecue.
This wasn't, was this at the gig that you did or no? This was
no.
Something different.
This was after the gig. That gig was on Friday night and then on,
okay.
Or on Saturday night. And then on Sunday, a guy named Thomas was in town from, he's Danish.
Ah.
But he lives in Germany, but he works in Switzerland.
Wait.
It was all very confusing.
Wait, slow down?
Yeah. I tried to keep track. I lost count. But very nice guy. And then I put it out to the group, and Joel Zimmer from the group shows up, and Cisco came, and Conrad came.
Nice.
And we went and got some barbecue. It's nice meeting people, listeners in real life.
Yes.
We're gonna have to make the point of doing more of that.
That's a great idea.
I am going to be walking around that Photo Plus Expo.
Right.
Probably on Thursday, maybe on Friday, maybe one or the other. So if you see me, say hello.
Do that.
And yeah, so if you guys are there, let me know. And what are you going to do?
Will you be signing headshots?
Yeah.
Bill will be at the Peter Hurley booth signing headshots. Yeah.
I'll sign the screen of your favorite podcast app.
sign the back of my iPod, Mr. Wadman.
Now you were going to do a little get together out there. What's up with that?
Okay. Yeah. We were going to try and do something in Joshua Tree on the 3rd, which I would still love to do. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this, but my father has been put on hospice care, so he's not doing well, and I'm kind of on standby with him to go out there and, you know, just spend whatever time I can with him. So I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm going to try and make that happen, but if it doesn't, I will keep you up to date and kind of let you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think all of the listeners could handle that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a thing.
We asked for questions from the group with some topics for this week, and we got a lot of them.
Yes.
So I think we may actually just start with that. Is that reasonable?
Sure. Who was first? Alan Bailward.
Oh, Alan Bailward. You know, the guy thinks he administrates the damn group. Oh, he does.
Oh, right.
All right, Alan, you were number one. So
now what does he want to know?
It would be great if his question was just first.
Right. Nothing. Just,
why do people do that?
I don't know.
Why is that a thing?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, let's see. His question is building up social media stuff, likes, followers, circles, etc., worth it in term worth it in terms of, does it translate to actual money and clients, or should we just ignore it, turn off the computer, and go take the effing pictures, as the great Zach Arias would say? If they do, how does one get this in a reasonable way, not buying them or posting spammy clickbait stuff? Yeah. He says, it's always funny to hear the famous photographer how likes, comments, followers doesn't matter when they have thousands or tens or hundreds of thousands of them. Irony. And you could say that about Zach, right? You know?
Right.
Like, you know, he's known as this, like, you know, photographer's photographer because he answers all the questions and goes on his blog and Twitters and Instagrams or whatever he does. So, yeah, I think that one is a little ironic. But, right. You know, I think we talked about this a little bit last week.
Right.
Just saying that, you know, if you're in a business that the kind of work you do gets noticed by other individuals, we pointed out like wedding or event photography, because people say, oh, who took your wedding pictures? It's probably worth just getting things out there, likes and stuff like on Facebook. But does like Twitter followers or circles, is that, you know, I don't know.
I think it depends on how you're positioning yourself and how you're using it. I know a few photographers that have landed some pretty large accounts from social media, from what they put up on social media. So yes, it can work. Do you pander to that? No, I don't think you do. I think the way a lot of them look at it is getting fans or followers or likes or whatever is a byproduct of putting up good work.
Yes. And I think that is the answer to the second half of this question.
You know. Oh, yeah, I do. I think that is true.
But it's interesting. I mean, good work is one thing. Stuff that people can learn from is another thing. Stuff that starts discussions is a third thing, you know? I mean, do more people know you and I because we do this show? Yeah. Do we do this show so that we can be known by people? No.
Right.
You know? I also, you know, I know that it's uncouth to say it, but I think that intent does have something to do with everything.
Sure it does.
You know? And if you're going in to get lots of I don't have a ton of Twitter. I have like 2,000 Twitter followers. So like, you know, I don't have a lot of Twitter followers. But I don't actively look for Twitter followers, you know, I just do what I do. And, you know, and I think, you know, there's an element of, you know, Leo Laporte is one of the biggest Twitter people for, you know, years, because he was one of the first people on there and he was a known quantity and, you know, he ended up on all these lists of who to follow.
Right.
And those things happen, you know. I'm on a list on Google Plus, so I have thousands of followers, or I'm circled, I guess, by tons of people on Google Plus. And it's because Thomas Hawk put me on a list of, you know, 200 photographers on the internet to watch or whatever, you know, one of those things.
Right.
So that had nothing to do with me, other than the fact that I know him and he knows me and, you know, he put me on this list. So
yeah, it really does come, I think, down to intent.
Yeah.
One of the people I follow is Kurt Smith from Tears for Fears.
Yeah.
And he regularly does these things where he's like, I've got an hour. Anybody want to ask some questions? Hit me.
Right.
And he'll just have little conversations.
But you have to have a big enough. I mean, if I do that with 2,000 followers, I get much less of a reaction than if you have 200,000 or whatever he has.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Sure.
Right. So, I mean, and then I'll see photographers who follow me or say something or retweet or whatever. And I'll go look and they're like, they have 26,000 followers. And they're like, you know, a pet photographer in Iowa. And I'm like, how the hell did they get 30,000 followers? You know, like where did that come from? See, it doesn't have any rhyme or reason, you know. And a lot of people with tons of followers, a lot of their followers are bots anyway. So, you know, how many followers are actual real? Apparently you can buy them, right? Twitter followers, you can, but it's all just fake.
You mean just to pump up your numbers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that I don't understand. I mean, you're taking something that is a legitimate form of communication and feedback with people that share your interests or appreciate or like your work. And you just want to pump up your numbers. So you feel, I don't understand that. I don't get it.
Yeah. I don't get it either. Note to self, cancel order. So yeah, I think that the people who talk about how it doesn't matter if you have a lot of followers are also the people who have a big enough megaphone that they have a lot of followers. It's the same thing of like rich people saying that money doesn't really matter. It's like, well, yeah, it's easy because you can pay your rent,
right,
and own
right.
three houses and, you know, all the rest of it. So sure, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think that we done with that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You want to get the next one here?
Sure. From Paul.
I was going to say Jaron was the next one.
Wait, is
there's
it?
One,
oh, right. Duh. Okay. When will OTP t-shirts be for sale? Gosh, that's a good question.
That is a good question, Jeffrey.
That is a good question. I've completely dropped the ball on that. I will try and pick that back up. Second, I'd love to know what your favorite other arts are. Where do you go for inspiration? Galleries, museums, painting.
Yeah,
so music. Music is a big inspiration.
Music is an inspiration to you?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Music's not an inspiration to me from the point of view of visual arts. I don't listen to music and then go, oh, I know what kind of photo I want to take or what kind of painting I want to do. How does that work with you? Is it just like an overall sense of it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, I know that when I'm actively drawing or painting or even writing, I have music going. A lot of times it's classical.
Yeah.
I also like kind of, you know, down tempo, like Thievery Corporation, stuff
classical,
like that.
Well, otherwise known as the sounds of your teenage years.
Yeah. Otherwise known as pop music. Yeah. I like I say, Thievery Corporation. I like Death Cab for Cutie.
Right.
It's just mellow stuff that doesn't.
So that just kind of keeps you in the zone.
Yes.
Okay. See, that's fine. And I agree with that I can go with. I guess for me, music is such an integral part of my history that it's a weird thing where it's sort of, I think of photography and music as two completely separate things, you know. I think because when I'm listening to music, I'm thinking about the music and I'm analyzing the music and I'm, you know.
So you can't separate and just enjoy it.
No.
Is it's like a director going to see a film.
Yeah.
They just can't separate.
I listen to recordings and I'm pulling apart the drum sound.
Ah, okay.
You know,
that's too bad.
And also, interestingly enough, I don't generally listen to lyrics. I was having this conversation with somebody the other day.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I was listening to Peaceful, Easy Feeling because I was watching that Eagles documentary.
Right.
And, you know, there's the line, I know you won't let me down because I'm already standing on the ground. Like, I can't go any lower. I'm already there, so you can't screw me over.
Okay.
And I never thought about what that lyric meant. Like, I know the words. I could sing it. In the phonetic part of my brain, I know the lyrics, but I've never actually thought about the meaning of the lyrics. Even songs that I've listened to hundreds of times, I don't think of them. I don't listen to the lyrics as words and sentences and poetry. I know them as the percussive and sounds that they make.
Okay. I go the other way.
Right.
There are certain artists who I love their lyrics and I find that I listen to their music, maybe not primarily, but in large part for their lyrics.
Yeah. And there are artists whose lyrics I really love. I just don't. That's not the first thing I listen to. It's like, I want to hear a melody. I want to hear interesting harmonies. And the words are sort of they're frosting.
Interesting.
To most of the time. I'm not saying that sometimes words aren't as important as the music. I'm just saying for me, where my mind automatically goes, I'm listening to the music. I'm not listening to the lyrics.
Right. Interesting. You know? Yeah. I kind of hone in on lyrics if I'm not listening to instrumental stuff just to kind of zone out.
Now, as a answer to his question, where do I go? Definitely painting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, Renaissance, Baroque, you know, the stuff where the light that they're using is the light that I'm trying to make in my photos a lot of times, you know. I like old stuff.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've talked about how I love Caravaggio before, and that's one of the reasons why we're going back to Italy is that I want to go see a bunch of Caravaggio paintings that I haven't seen before. So for me, I totally look at that. And some people say that that's stealing, you know?
Now, when you go to museums, whether it's here or on your trip, do you photograph paintings
in
the museums? Are you one of those?
Never.
Okay.
Because you know what? If you want that picture of that painting, somebody else has taken a much better picture of it in a book that's downstairs or a postcard the people who are taking pictures of paintings with their phones and stuff, I don't understand that at all. If you want to take a picture of, you know, your wife in front of the painting to, you know, hey, look, here we are in front of the Mona Lisa. Like,
sure,
that I can buy. But just taking a picture of the Mona Lisa, why are you doing that? You know, there are better representations of that painting. And who's ever going to look at, oh, here's my picture of School of Athens, you know?
Right, right.
It's like, you're never going to do that. So, yeah, I think that's silly. I don't do that. There are times, actually, well, I take that back. There have been a few times where I will take a picture for reference purposes. Like, oh, look at that painting. Oh, look at the way that girl's posed. Like, I'm going to take a picture of the label and the picture so that I can remember what it is so I can look it up later. You know, I'll do that sometimes.
Yes.
But that's just so that it's basically writing it down instead of writing it down.
Mm-hmm,
you know what
mm-hmm,
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't go much beyond painting. Like I don't look at dance and get ideas for photography generally, mm-hmm. you know? Ironically enough, since I did a big project with dancers and photography, I just don't, you know, I don't think.
Yeah, but to be fair, those shots are very painterly.
True. Right. So
they're not what you would normally associate with.
I think dance is beautiful art, but I don't look at it and say, oh, I know what kind of photographs I want to take because I saw that wonderful dance piece. You know, those two don't add up in much the same way that listening to music doesn't make me think about what kind of pictures I want to take generally, unless it's Nine Inch Nails and I want to take like murder pictures.
Right. Did you happen to, quick aside.
Sure.
Did you ever see the shoot? It was a Nikon promo shoot that Seliger did with Baryshnikov, where Baryshnikov is dancing with just one of the theater lights.
I have not, but I'd imagine that it's good.
It's very, very cool. Where Seliger is just kind of moving around him. I think it was for a D3X or D3S, one of the D3s. But just so graceful. This guy's, Baryshnikov is literally dancing with a light pole, and it looks incredibly beautiful.
Baryshnikov can move, man, that guy.
That guy, he knows a thing or two.
Yeah, he seems like if you got him in the right thing, dude, he'd be a nice guy.
Seems like it, yeah.
You know,
I actually got to see him dance, and he was amazing.
I would imagine so. You think he's the Wayne Gretzky of dance?
I think he's up there, yes.
You think dancers would agree with that, or you think dancers would go, yeah, whatever?
I don't know. Ask.
We'll have to ask some of our dancer friends.
Ask Cisco.
Okay. What's next on the list?
You should take this one.
I recently pulled out my old Pentax Spotmatic SP my dad and I used when I was in college. I still love the camera, so very simple to use, visual aperture, fantastic. So my question is there anything this simple on the digital market today? My answer would be no.
I don't know the Spotmatic. Was it a rangefinder? What was it?
No, I think the Spotmatic was an SLR. Yeah. It's basically the Spotmatic SP was sort of before the K1000.
Oh, okay. Okay, here it is. Okay.
You know what, Paul, what you are referring to is exactly what I'm looking for. And, you know, I've spent the last couple of weeks playing with this Fuji and there are a lot of other people on the internet who say that it is what you are kind of talking about, which is this camera that is, you know, just old school style and take a picture and it's right there and whatever it is. I do not feel it's that at all personally.
Mm.
It takes beautiful pictures. I'm actually, Heather is going to like bean me over the head with something. But I'm considering not taking it on my trip.
Okay.
Are you have something to say about that?
So you're going to take your Mark III after all?
I may. I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
Will you keep the 100 or are you going to sell it?
I will probably sell it. I'll sell it regardless.
I think I'm going to sell my X Pro. So
yeah.
Anybody interested, message me.
In some ways, I feel like the X Pro might be a little closer than even this X100 is.
It's a fantastic camera and I love it. And maybe I'll keep it. I don't know. But I want something that does video for an upcoming project. Okay. And I don't know if I should keep it and get something else.
I don't think that the cameras that you're looking at for the video stuff like that, what is that, Panasonic?
The GX7 is in the running, although Fuji just released the XE2, which gives me that kind of look and feel and even styling that I
uses
like.
Uses your glass.
Yeah.
So you can get another body.
1080, 60 frames a second. So that might be the winner. And then I can keep my X Pro and use that. Use my X Pro for stills and then use the XE2 for video.
Yeah. I wish that there was a camera out there that was like manual focus or really fast autofocus. And other than that, didn't have a whole lot of settings. Didn't feel like there was a computer between you and taking the pictures, you know?
And it has to have an optical viewfinder because you hate EVFs.
Yeah, I don't really like EVFs. Although I've been using the EVF sometimes to check composition because when you're closer, the parallax is so off on these rangefinder things that, you know. Well, because you look into the EVF and everything's like blown out. You know what I mean? Stuff that's not going to be blown out in the picture looks really kind of blown out and too bright in the EVF.
I hear that the XE2 is really nice.
Okay.
In fact, hey, Fuji, why don't you send me an XE2? Let me play with it.
Send them one to play with.
We'll talk about it on the show.
But yeah, I wish there was a camera that was exactly like you're talking about or like the Canonet old school tiny little rangefinder that has like four settings and you take pictures. And let's say, just for the sake of argument, it's always raw so that you always have to just bring it into something to do the white balance and all the rest of it. You know, this is I think that a camera like that, if simple enough, would actually sell well as just a simple, incredibly fast, responsive camera.
I think it probably would. And I think more and more these cameras are trying
to market.
Well, they're trying to get there, though.
I hope they're trying to get there, but I don't know. I was hoping that this camera was it, and I don't feel like it is, at least not for me.
Okay.
So so there's that. It takes really pretty pictures, though.
Yeah, it does.
I wish there was something really simple. Or, like people have said, why don't we have a thing that goes in the back of 35mm cameras that has a sensor where the film's supposed to be, and it saves it all in a, you know, somewhere where the roll is. Basically, so you could turn any old film camera into a digital camera.
Like a digital back or
something. Yeah, there were jokes and sort of fake renderings of stuff like that back in the day, but I don't think they ever made them.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think that wouldn't be a terrible idea if you could technically pull it off.
Yeah, if you could pull that off.
Darren Rye, juice with bits or smooth?
Pulpy for me.
See, I'm a smooth kind of guy.
Although I like smooth peanut butter.
Everyone likes smooth peanut butter.
Yeah.
GIF or Skippy or the real stuff?
What do you mean the real? GIF makes this natural, GIF Naturals.
Yeah,
that I like quite a bit.
Yeah. See, I'm a old school GIF kind of guy. Yeah. If I'm eating peanut butter, I want sugar. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
Michael Meinhardt, what do you got?
Some successful photographers dispense this seemingly sensible idea that you should shoot in your own backyard because that is what you know best. I think the opposite. My best pictures come from traveling and exposing myself to situations and circumstances that scare me. What works best for you? You know,
hey, Michael, boo. Yeah. Michael takes his best pictures on Halloween.
Yeah. photographer, and I believe listens to the show, Stuart Sipigo.
Okay, yeah.
Wrote a fantastic ebook called Close to Home, and it's filled with little tips and exercises for getting better photographs around where you live. Because yes, it's familiar to you, but the exercises are based around looking a little deeper and seeing those things that you may pass by each and every day and not notice. He's got one of the projects in the book is a 1 mile rule project where you use Google Maps or use a physical map, whatever, and kind of get a rough idea of a mile circle around your home.
Right.
And for a week or so, shoot only in that circle. And I found that to be a really great exercise for just kind of looking a little deeper and trying to notice things that you may see every day but not really see.
That's so almost that's almost cheating. Well, okay, I agree, but it's kind of a mile radius from me. There's a whole lot of stuff. A mile radius from your dad's house, there's not a whole lot of stuff.
Relative, yeah, yeah. Sure, sure, yeah.
You tend to shoot around your place? Do you feel that that is a good exercise for you?
It's interesting. I tend to prefer to go into LA. If I'm right. going to just go out and wander around and take pictures. Again, I don't shoot a lot because my focus is going in kind of a different direction at the moment. But I see the value in it. I like shooting little details. So having to really look and really pay attention to find something interesting, I enjoy quite a bit.
Yeah, for me, I carry cameras sometimes around my neighborhood, and a lot of the pictures that I put up for those few months when I was doing posting every day on the group were stuff I found while walking around just with my phone.
You posted something, a cafe or something recently that I really liked.
The jewelry store?
Oh, maybe that was it. Jewelry store. It was a storefront. Yeah.
You like that one?
I like it a lot.
Okay. Yeah. Gary's Jewelers. Yeah. It's been around. I think it's closed up now.
Hey, I like that picture of Gary's Jewels.
Gary's. Okay, moving on. But I also find that it's I don't see that much interesting stuff, even though you could argue that I am in a very interesting place.
Mm-hmm.
My neighborhood does not inspire me all that much.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But then again, it all depends on what kind of pictures you take, you know?
Right. That's not your normal filter or grid.
Yeah. I'm not a street photographer. I'm not mm-hmm. just a people I see out on. That's just not my thing.
You're not Randy Duchesne.
I am nothing as close to being as cool as Randy Duchesne. Duchesne takes some serious pictures.
He gets the juice.
Yeah. He's heavy.
Yeah.
That dude's been around. So yeah, I guess, you know what, I think it's a sensible idea, but I tend to agree with Michael that I work better when I have new stuff around me, not when I am refining old stuff.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to say that there was no value in that. I just find interesting exercises in right. trying to, you know, pull some new stuff out.
I think, I mean, it is also, if you were the kind of person who, requires regimentation.
Right.
Then, yeah, okay, it's good exercise, but I don't know that it will work for everybody, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll get to that a little bit later when we talk about that other article about creativity.
Okay.
Let's see, Greg, is it possible to achieve the Fuji X100S JPEG look in Lightroom 5 when editing the RAW files? So you're saying if you're shooting RAW files in the Fuji thing and then want it to look the same way, can you do that?
Or is he saying...
Can I make
if I'm shooting
Nikon.
With my Nikon or Canon? Yeah.
I think, okay, so there are a number of things in here. There are, let's abstract it for a second and say, let's say you're shooting with a Canon or a Nikon.
Mm-hmm.
In Lightroom, if you import all those RAW files, on the right-hand side in the develop, all the way down the bottom is the calibration section.
Right, camera calibration, yeah. Sure.
And in there, generally, people use Adobe, what is it called? Adobe Regular, Adobe...
Adobe Standard?
Adobe Standard, that's what
mm-hmm.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
But then underneath that are Camera Faithful, Camera Landscape, Camera Neutral. And those are sort of replications of the curves that are in the camera when you choose Faithful or Landscape or Standard. You know, so it gets you closer to what it would look like if it was a JPEG in the camera.
Right.
But you're
only going to get the ones of the camera that you're shooting.
Right. And I don't know. I've had this Fuji camera for weeks now, and I have not taken one raw picture from it into Lightroom. Because I
you're
want,
only shooting JPEG.
I have been, yeah.
Huh.
I don't know what I'm going to do on my trip, but yes, I've only been shooting JPEG. So, I mean, have you you've done raw files in Lightroom?
Yes.
Are there profiles in there for the Fuji looks?
You know, I think so.
Okay. So either play with that a little bit. That could get you close. I think that overall the film emulation kind of stuff we talked about a few weeks ago, where you can get sort of presets for Lightroom that are supposedly closer, either using that Totally Rad Replichrome or the Visco, right? Is that the other one?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kinds of things that are going to get you closer. The thing is that...
Oh, yeah, there is.
There are?
Mm. Yeah.
Are they listed as the same thing?
Fuji X-Pro exterior direct sun, exterior overcast, exterior shaded sun, interior natural light.
That's what's in there. That's weird, because those are not... I wonder if those at all... That's weird.
Strange, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of strange curves.
Yeah.
So, you would think that there would be the, like, the neg H and the...
Yeah, exactly. You
know, yeah.
So maybe there isn't for the Fuji. The thing is that all those things are kind of arbitrary, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, there's this sense that, oh, this certain setting on the Fuji is similar to Velvia, and so I want a Velvia setting in Lightroom. Well, you know what? It's yeah, there's a curve in the camera, and if you really like that look, then shoot JPEG in the camera, you know?
Right.
If you have the RAW file, could you take the RAW file and... play with the sliders until you get the color to look similar to it looks in the JPEG? Yeah, I'm sure you could. Is there like a button that you can push to do that? I don't think so.
Yeah, you can get it there and then save those settings as a preset.
Right. But then again, raw data comes out of the camera and the number of times there are curves applied to it or there's, let me put it another way. The number of ways and times that there is a reinterpretation of that data on the way for it to become an image are numerous,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember months and months and months ago, we talked about the one guy wrote that article about how he took a 5D3 and he shot color charts with it and then fixed all of the... hue, saturation, and luminosity sliders in Lightroom to make that chart more perfect for his 5D3.
Okay.
Because remember the reds saturated and stuff?
Yeah.
So he basically nulled out whatever bias the camera had to get him to sort of a base nothingness that he could then build up from.
Then started from there again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure you could do a similar thing, but is there an easy way to do it? I don't know. For me, I want the Fuji because I want to be able to just sort of take pictures and mm-hmm. even the JPEGs have a fair amount of latitude in them. I mean, it's not like a raw file, but it's certainly not terrible.
They're pretty forgiving.
Yeah. I mean, you can pull up the shadows a lot and you know, do that kind of stuff. And I already have it sort of one of the reasons I shoot raw is so that I can pull up shadows a little bit and then roll off highlights a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to. And in the Fuji, you can actually do that in the JPEG engine. You know, there's
right.
those curves.
Right.
So I have both of those at like -1. So it curves off a little bit at both ends. And that kind of gives you that film S curve right at the ends anyway, you know, mm-hmm. linear through the middle, but
a little bit of softened fall off on
either
end.
Softened at the ends. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess that's the best we can do for that. There might be a better answer. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's good.
Did you find that, you were playing with Capture One for a while. Did you find that really was that much better?
There is a visible difference in how Capture One deals with the Fuji raw images over Lightroom.
Okay.
Are you going to see that in print? Probably not.
Right.
But it's noticeable.
That much better than even the newer Lightrooms that supposedly updated their...
It's still noticeable. Yeah. Okay. Lightroom 5, what is it? 5.2 or 5.3 versus Capture One 7, what is it? 7.4? 7.2.4, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's noticeable.
Okay.
Again, are you going to see that in print? No.
Okay. Jeffrey, what's your fantasy interview? I think you answered that this morning when I picked up the phone with you.
I did?
Yeah. You said you know who I'd really like to talk to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. all things, Sting. I would love to sit down with Sting.
Yeah.
If we're talking photographers, ooh, there are quite a few. Gregory Crudson is way up there. In fact, he might even be at the top of the list because I think he's really interesting. But yeah, I would love to sit down and have a chat with Sting.
Okay. I think that that is a, I think you could make that happen.
Maybe. I don't want the Sting shtick. You know, I want to talk to him about, you know, his writing and not being a member of the Police and superstardom and all this other garbage. I don't care about that. I'd like to talk about the writing process and what he goes through and how he approaches writing and, you know, was it difficult to revisit memories of losing his father, which kind of the Soul Cages was based on.
Right.
Was it difficult to revisit that for The Last Ship, or since he's now not writing as himself, but he's writing for characters, was it as if the character was revisiting and it was easier for him to get there? I think it's really interesting how he puts together songs. So I'd like to talk to him about that.
I think Sting is listening, so maybe he'll get in touch.
That would be great. Or maybe if not Sting, maybe Miles Copeland is listening. So Miles will reach out.
My fantasy shoot.
What is your fantasy shoot?
I have a list of people I'd love to take pictures of. And I actually keep it on the internet. If you go to billwadman.com/the list, you will see.
Do you really? I have never known about this.
There is a list of people that I have on my list.
Let me see. I'll tell you what you've got.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what's
here. A couple
here.
Of these people have died and I have to remove them.
Fran Drescher. Really?
No, shut up. Yeah, so
Michio Kaku is on my interview list. I would love to talk to him.
All right. Well, see, this is the thing. So I have a list of people that I want to shoot.
See, now here's what we should do. We should figure out,
set up interview photo shoots.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's that would be fantastic. So, you shoot Michio Kaku's portrait, talk to, cause, and that would be a fun talk.
Yep.
Cause he's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
Elon Musk. Ooh, that would be a good one.
I have people on here twice. Whoops. Yeah. So if you guys, want to take a look at this list, billwadman.com/the list and,
Bill Nye. Oh, that would be a good one too.
I can get that one.
Can you really?
I don't know. I'm working on it.
Get on that. That would be great. Hugh Laurie.
Look, there are tons of people on here that I'd love to shoot. And if anybody out there happens to know people who know these people, let me know, because I would love to make this happen.
I think you could make that happen.
Yeah. There's lots of people on here that I could make happen. And every once in a while, I will email people, you know, when they're in town or whatever. I tried to do that recently with Stanley Jordan. Guitarist, jazz
sure,
guitarist.
Sure, sure.
Never wrote me back.
Wait, Frere Jones is on your list too. I think you could make that happen. I mean, they're right down the block from you, aren't they?
And I actually now have a friend of mine is now their chief counsel.
Yeah, you could make that happen.
I could actually. I've talked to one of them.
Oh, okay. Greg Bear, good author. I like Greg Bear.
Do you ever read Anvil of Stars?
Yes.
Oh, that fantastic book. That book twists me up. I watch it. I read it and I go, wait, did these people know that the kids were going to become bad because they gave them the technology they need, but then they need more tech, so they gave them more tech because they were worried that they would become the killers? And
yeah.
Like, you start sort of spinning in, you know, the benefactors are, now I got to reread that. Anyway.
You know what? May I bite this this idea and do a list? I love this.
It's cool, right?
This is great. I need to do this.
So I have a list.
I think this is great. I'm going to do a list like this of people that I would love to sit down with.
Okay. I think you should.
Wow. This is great. I never knew about it.
So anyway, that's out there. I'll put in the show notes.
Thanks, little buddy.
Yeah. Jason says, friend of the show, Jason here. Who says you're friend of the show? Who do you think you are?
Hey, we'll
you're no
decide.
Friend of mine.
We'll decide that, mister.
What were your first cameras and why do you shoot what you shoot now? Jeffrey, were you always Fuji? Bill, did you ever shoot Canon? I only shoot Canon. Or not only, but I have shot Canon for years. If you thought I was a Nikon guy, I am not.
Maybe he thought you only shot Leica.
What was your first? What was your first camera, Jeffrey?
First camera that was actually my own camera was a Pentax Super Program. and purchased at Frank's Camera in Highland Park, California.
That now that is very close to that's sort of a that's a later version of the 1000.
It's
so 1000 with a single automatic mode.
No, it had shutter priority, aperture priority. It was the whole deal.
Wow, fancy. High tech for the 1890s.
Hey, you haven't made photographs until you've done shutter priority on glass plate.
wait a minute. Hold on. I got to write that down. Okay. Let's see.
You like that?
Yeah, that was cute. What was my first camera? The camera that I first used, I mean, I had like little 110. Remember those cameras when you were a little kid?
Sure.
And 220, you know, like the double width 110s. But the first camera that I actually ever used that was a serious camera was my father's camera, which was a Canon AE-1, which I took to school in seventh grade without asking. And I got yelled at a lot.
Did you break it?
No. And, it was a weird thing where I didn't I took pictures with it and I brought it home. And I didn't break it or anything like that. But it was always sort of this thing you can't touch that's in the drawer in the office room or whatever.
Sure.
And my father at that time didn't use it much. Apparently my father used to take a lot more pictures when I was younger, and he even had a little dark room in his bathroom when I was like a baby, but I never knew anything about this until later. But the crazy thing about it is that now that AE-1, after my father died, went to me, like no one else wanted it. So I have it in my closet now in the same sort of, those old school leather things that snap in the back and flip off,
The body cases, the two snaps. Sure.
Yeah. And so now it's sitting in there with, a 50mm lens on it. And this camera that I wasn't allowed to touch when I was a kid is now mine sitting on a shelf in my closet. Cause like, why would I use that when I have Leicas and I have all these fancy cameras. So it's funny that the camera that was sort of the one that I wasn't supposed to touch is now mine and I don't touch it.
You choose not to touch it.
My first camera as an adult was a Pentax K1000, which I bought in 2000, at Adorama for $199 with a 50mm lens. And I shot that for a while and then I upgraded the reason I stuck with Canon is that my brother at the time, Mark, had some sort of Canon automatic EOC kind of thing from the 90s. And I wanted to stick with Canon because I guess my father had Canon. I guess that's the way it works for a lot of people. Like my parents had an Icon, so I always use Nikon or Canon, whatever it is.
My dad had Olympus. A Miranda 35mm camera. Do you remember those?
No.
Yeah. Miranda.
Miranda camera. I never saw those. There they are. Yeah. It's like a Minolta knockoff. It looks like.
Kind of. Yeah. Had that for years.
I remember my father and then, so I had that and then I'd say I bought an Alon 7, which was the medium film camera at the time. Mm-hmm. And that led me to a Digital Rebel when those came out for $700 and I went from there. But, I remember my father bought my sister a camera when I was a kid, and it was in the drawer when I was looking through my father's stuff. It was a Mamiya 35mm SLR.
Oh, wow.
But I don't think Mamiya made it. I think
Pentax they just put their name on
something.
It?
And, I think it was rebranded something else.
Huh.
And it was broken. The shutter was broken. But anyway, it was just kind of funny. So that's the answer to that one. Okay. What's next?
What are we doing on time? We okay?
We're fine.
Okay. What's next? Patrick Wong.
Yes.
Yeah, skip that. No, kidding. Hey, fancy New York photographer Bill Wadman and storyteller Jefferson. What is the next level of success for you both individually and as collaborators? And what steps are you taking to get where you want to go? Wow, great question.
Well, I'm looking for a new partner. Well, I'm actively looking for someone else to do the show with.
Auditions will be today at 2 p.m.
on Google+.
Wow. Okay. You'd be satisfied to just look at achieving your goals. Okay. Okay.
What is the next level for you?
The next level is for me is another interview show.
Okay.
And putting together a new project tentatively called 1,000 Words.
Okay.
Where I will be doing these sort of video portraits of photographers and artists talking about a single image that has affected them some way, whether it's one of their own images or someone else's image that has some sort of profound effect on them. And we'll be recording that and then cutting it together with the image. And it's going to be pretty cool. I'm very much looking forward to it. There is a redesign of Faded and Blurred that's pretty well done. I need to tighten up some things on the back end. What in terms of success, that's hard to quantify. Being able to, you know, make a comfortable living, having conversations and telling stories, not a bad way to go.
I agree.
And you? What's
you know,
the next plateau?
My thing is that I haven't achieved the goals that I set up years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I want to work more. You know, I would love to be work. I'd love to be shooting every day,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
for clients.
For yeah, not doing personal projects.
for the clients that I want to shoot for, not just anything every day.
But then, if you're shooting every day for clients, you're going to complain that you don't have any time for personal work.
Maybe, but I think the thing is that the work that I do for clients, I don't mentally distinguish it from the work that I do for me. Like I don't go into a portrait shoot for a magazine and think of it any differently really than if I went to see them because they were on a list of mine.
Right.
You know,
right,
I take the pictures I take and people hire me to take those pictures. So I don't need to separate those things. You know, I would like to keep doing the work I'm doing, do more of it and do more of it for better clients. And that, I mean, that is all very progressive.
Right.
I would love to do more conceptual work for advertising, which I'm working on now.
Right.
You know, getting more of that stuff. So more of my drabbly kind of stuff, but doing that for bigger commercial clients.
I think that's a really good idea. I think your drabbles are really good.
Now, as far as the rest of it, you know, this last week I had a bit of an epiphany.
You did?
Yeah, I had a bit of an epiphany about... Yeah,
you even texted me about it, which was cool. You're like, I had a breakthrough about this, more later.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I not to go too deep into it, because, you know, we tend to do that and then go off on tangents. But, you know, I have lived my life very much sort of in reaction to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would pick out the flaws of the people who I felt had hurt me, and I would point to them and I would say, you know, I will never be what that person was, or that kind of thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
that those people were all bad, and so therefore to not be them, I had to be all good,
right?
And
you found that you were living a lot of your life out of spite.
Yes, and. It's an interesting thing to allow yourself the argument that said, well, you know what? All those people were not all bad, and mm-hmm. therefore I don't have to be all good all the time, you know?
Right, right.
That I shouldn't feel guilty if I'm not perfect. And
there's the realization that,
through, but yeah.
There's the realization that they weren't perfect either.
Right. Of course. Perfectly bad or perfectly good. Right.
Right.
No one is, you know? So in that way, my dreams, not that they're shifting, but that they might actually be more achievable as this sort of renders out, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We'll see. It's all this stuff. These are difficult questions. They're big questions, you know?
Yeah. This is a really good question.
Now,
Patrick,
as far as you and I go, world domination.
You know, it's hard to gauge how big or how small the show is, has become, will become. I don't think either of us thought that we would, at least I didn't think we would hit 80 episodes or 78 episodes or whatever. I thought we would run out of things to talk about. But I think just the opposite is happening, in that we are finding new areas to go, but you guys, the listeners, are driving us to new areas that I think is really fantastic, and coming up with topics or answering questions or raising questions that I wouldn't have thought of on my own.
And we keep getting new messages from new listeners, emails and Facebook and that kind of stuff from new people saying, oh, I just found the show a couple episodes ago. Now I'm listening to all the back catalog. And
And
it's really great. And, you know, I mean, it also helps that the fans that we have that really love the show, they share it with their friends, which I hope you do.
Yep.
We would like to be listened to as many people as possible, but we'd like to be listened to as many people as possible who actually want to hear what we're doing. We're not going to change so that we get more listeners. You know,
correct.
We do what we do, and we, in the same way that I like for my career, we do what we do, and we hope people like it and want it for what it is.
But almost
everyone who likes the show always comments, I was always looking for a photo podcast that wasn't about gear, and I finally found it with you guys. And it's like, well, okay, well then we're hitting a nerve. We're filling a need.
Yes.
We'd love more listeners, you know, we'd love to do more in-person events. And I think we will over the next year.
Yeah, I think so too.
We'd love to be sent hundreds of thousands of dollars. You can just PayPal that to Bill.
That's right. And, you know, again, Fuji, that offer is on the table.
But you know what? You know, but what will reaching that next level provide us? Will it be satisfied, or just look at achieving your goal as just another step forward in photography and podcast world domination? See, he already said that world domination in there. I, you know, I think that as I get older, no, not even as I get older, I think lately I try to appreciate where I am and what I have more than before, while still at the same time striving to move forward, you know?
Yeah. I'm not even concerned with forward at the moment. Just so long as there's movement.
Yeah.
Just so long as there's not stagnation.
Because what direction is forward? Do we even know?
Right. I don't know.
Right.
You know, as long as I'm in motion and trying some new things, and lately a big area is stepping outside of my comfort zone, because I don't typically do that.
And the comfort zone is Rancho Cucamonga.
Well, no, not geographically. Yeah. but yeah, that too. But, you know, approaching people that I would never have approached before.
Right.
Or reaching out to people that I would never have reached out to before, or even just starting new projects that I wouldn't have started before. This show has been a platform or a springboard for not necessarily my career, but I think my emotional well-being over the past year plus.
Yeah.
You know, that this show has helped me in ways that I could never have imagined when we were first starting it.
Yeah.
So I want to continue that.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. We got a couple more here. We'll wrap this up and then we'll move on. Good places to see the work of working photographers, fine art or commercial, who are working steadily but not getting that, not being a celebrity photographer or social media hero. For example, I would run across Dan Winters without hearing him from your podcast. The answer to this one, Nick, is fadedandblurred.com.
There's some good stuff up there.
Seriously, yeah. I think your site is one of the good examples.
Mm-hmm.
Of
thank you
places to see stuff that you wouldn't notice otherwise, you know,
it's
the stuff
really,
that's not on Huffington Post.
Yeah. It's really the sort of core of what we do is just finding stuff that's interesting and sharing it.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's, I think that's true. Thank you.
Other than that, man, it's hard.
It's tough.
I mean, I guess, you know, go to galleries. If you're in a city that has galleries that, you know, if you're in a place that you can get to galleries, because a lot of times there's really good stuff going on there too.
Mm-hmm. There are some great photo blogs. The In Focus on the Atlantic, great photo blog. The New York Times has one called Lens that's very good.
Or if you see an ad that you really like, you look up who did the photography, because you can usually figure that out. And then what else was this? Oh, he has a question. The new Sony A7 and A7R, greatest cameras ever, or momentous inventions, or the most momentous inventions in the history of invention. So he's basically saying, are they the greatest or are they the greatest?
All right, so those are the little, the full frame compacts, right?
Full frame compact, but it's an EVF, right?
Maybe. I honestly don't know much. I've been kind of out of the loop for a while.
Looks like a 24 megapixel with a thing in front of it, 36 without. So it's probably the same, a similar sensor to the D800, because that uses a Sony sensor too.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'd be surprised if it wasn't the same sensor. Weather sealed body, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, how much does this thing cost? I don't think they're that...
If they're full frame, they're probably, what, in the $3,000 category for a body?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea, though, is it's supposed to be a lot smaller and oh, here we go. $22.99 for the body, for the expensive one. $16.99 for the body only, or $2,000. I don't know. Is it that much of a step? I don't know what the big step is. Apparently they have... Yeah, they have weird mount lenses. My feeling about cameras is that if it's not an all-in-one camera like the X100 that I bought,
right,
stick with kits that have a known life longevity. You know what I mean? If you buy Canon or Nikon, you know there are going to be tons of Canon and Nikon stuff going out. If Sony next year decides they want to stop making this thing, then you're stuck with sort of a dead end, you know?
Well, it may be a great camera. Nikon, here's a Nikon to announce a full frame to rival the A7 in the next 3 weeks.
Okay. So,
and then Canon will come out with one, and then, you know, they'll all just keep leapfrogging each other.
Again, none of the cameras that are out today are stopping you from doing anything.
Correct.
So what are we talking about here?
You know?
They have electronic viewfinders. 1024 by 768 electronic viewfinder. And they have Wi-Fi, which I think is a good idea. The whole Wi-Fi thing is cool because then you can, you know, as long as you can use it to set up a little network and just shoot your pictures to your computer if your computer's there, But a lot of them don't do that. They're like, Wi-Fi to hook up your phone to your camera. It's like, well, I don't want to do that.
Let me set up a little ad hoc thing and wirelessly tether to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Full frame for $2,000. Great. You know, have fun. Not interesting to me, but sure. And lastly, Aaron Chen, what do you got?
A little late, but what do you think of what happened with the internet famous photographers Jasmine Starr and Doug Gordon?
I have never heard of either of these people, and I had to look at this to find out what's going on. Apparently they were stealing articles or something.
Something like that. Stealing tweets. Doug Gordon used a Jason Mraz song on his website, and the question is, did he really license it? Well, that just kind of annoys me to begin with. I mean, if you're going to claim copyright and don't steal my images, but I'm going to go ahead and use U2 or Coldplay on my website. Come on. Knock it off.
A little bit of a dick move.
Yeah. Knock it off.
I think that's a problem for a lot of event photographers who put music to their pictures on their websites. A lot of them don't pay for that.
Yes.
I don't know. You know, internet famous photographers. I don't know who these people are, but then again, this is not the kind of stuff that I shoot, right? This girl is like a hot girl who shoots weddings. Is that what her thing is?
Right.
Yeah. You know how much interest I have in a hot girl who shoots weddings?
How much?
None at all. Moving on. Look, if she was really stealing stuff and then people are just like, screw that, I don't want that girl, well, then I think that's exactly what should happen.
Right.
Because I think it's a dick move to steal other people's stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
But then again, the let's do a workshop and all of us go on a photo walk. I don't know. I don't know how much that actually helps people take better pictures and how much of it is just a social thing, which is fine.
I think it really depends on who's hosting it.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
you've been on some that are good and you've been on some that are not so good.
Yeah. I wish I were going to be on the one that Tom Hoops is doing in London this
right.
weekend.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
See, I don't take pictures that are better when groups of people are around.
Right. Well, yeah. And we'll get to that with the photo that you showed me this morning. The group of photographers
yes.
shooting the same thing.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
All right. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Well,
good.
We just spent an hour doing Q&A.
That's great. Thank you guys for writing in.
Go
ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I was going to move on. But
I was just going to say, if you've got something, leave it on the Google Plus group or podcast it on Taking Pictures, or you can tweet Bill at Bill Wadman, or you can tweet me at Jeffrey Sidoris.
That's right.
Just doing it a little early.
I think we should talk about one of our sponsors today.
Oh, geez. Now who?
Squarespace.
Dun, dun, dun.
I like that, right?
Yeah, you like that?
Look, you guys all know this stuff. Squarespace, it's an all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For free trial and 10% off, you go to squarespace.com and use the offer code GHOSTPHOTO.
That wasn't even planned.
No, it was perfect, though. All right.
Hey, can I just say, somebody asked, is it Jorge Quinteros? Is that how you pronounce it?
What did he say?
Asked about the new template that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago.
Which one was it?
I responded. It was, I don't even remember what I responded with. But then Baleward chimes in and says, pretty sure it's the only one with enough room for Jeffrey's About Me section.
Oh! Hey, that's pretty funny.
Right?
Is that the one you're using?
No, it's not the one. So, fail.
Wow, that's a pretty good rip.
Wise ass.
Okay.
Look, yeah, and then hashtag duck and cover.
Squarespace is constantly improving their platform. They have new features, new designs, even better support. They have beautiful designs to start with, all the style options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. If you do it right, Squarespace sites do not look like each other, which is fantastic.
Right.
They have over 20 highly customizable templates for you to choose from. They've won numerous design awards from the FWA, Webby's, Forbes. It's easy to use. Even my mother could use it. No offense, Mom, if you're listening. If you want some help, they have amazing support team. Yeah, I know.
What do you mean, Bill?
Yeah. There's a support team that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They have 70 employees on their customer care team based in New York. And they hang out in their Care Bear lair. And
isn't Joel a Squarespace guy?
No, he works for another company.
Oh, okay. I thought he was. Okay.
And they've won numerous awards. They even won a Gold Stevie Award. Their support has won awards.
That's pretty serious.
I think their awards have won awards.
Yeah. When your support wins awards, support doesn't win awards.
Yeah. Yeah. Gold Stevie. And of course, responsive all the way down to mobile, right? So it looks good on every device.
Yep.
And for photography, drag and drop your images straight from your desktop into the browser window. They have all these templates that have full bleed display, so like they go edge to edge.
Yep.
You know?
Forte is the newest template.
All right, I'm gonna have to go play with that one.
They have
hundreds of customizable settings. You can change fonts, colors, sizes, all that kind of stuff. You can make it look exactly how you want. And you can even use these picture gallery blocks in blog posts on there and that kind of stuff too. So it's great. You don't need a credit card. Start building your website. When you decide to sign up, use the offer code GHOSTPHOTO to get 10% off. So go check out Squarespace. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. Thank you to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures.
Yes, thank you guys.
Squarespace. All right, what's next?
Genius.
We've got a rundown of possible news stories to comment on.
What do you think of this? Do you have rituals that you go through, don't you? You have patterns. You have little things that you do, right?
I'm honestly not sure how I feel about this.
Okay, so The Guardian, which is a fantastic site, theguardian.com, Rise and Shine, The Daily Routines of History's Most Creative Minds.
Yes.
And they profile what some of these people did. And it's little things like you know, be a morning person because you're more cognitive and creative in the mornings. Take a lot of walks. Yep. Stick to a schedule. You know, what's the famous Chuck Close quote? I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like, you know, you just get to work. Don't wait for inspiration to strike. You just get to work.
Right.
What do you think of some of these?
Okay. I think that all of these are possibly very useful. Don't mm-hmm. give up your day job. Take lots of walks. Stick to a schedule. Practice strategic substance abuse. Yeah, and Ayn Rand took Benzedrine. She was basically, you know, it's never a good idea, Jeffrey.
Amphetamines.
learn to work anywhere. Look, these are fine if they work for you, right? It's whatever works for you. You could just as easily say, you know, I tend to work much better at night because I don't have distractions and I don't have the light changing outside to give me a sense of how time is happening, know? So I tend to work much better at night than I ever do in the morning. So George O'Keefe can suck it, you know? Like, so it's all personal to you. Don't give up your day job. Well, maybe, or maybe you're much better if you dedicate yourself to it full bore. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, for different people, it's different stuff.
So maybe it's not so much advice as much as it is just interesting to see what some people...
That is a much better way to put it.
There you go.
I don't think that this is necessarily great advice.
But it is interesting to see what, you know...
Well, what's interesting about it is how varied it all is and how no one works creatively in the same way, which is to say... The whole concept of learning to think creatively, I feel like, is a misnomer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I mean, everyone is creative in some way. It's trying to figure out how you are creative and how your creativity gets pushed out there. And if that's waking up early, great. You know, if that's, you know, eating deviled eggs for breakfast, that's great. You know,
right.
If that's doing crystal meth, it's probably not a great idea, but you know, whatever works for you. So it's, you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I think that things like this that sort of talk as if we found the magic solution are the creative equivalent of fad diets.
Okay.
You know, we know how to lose weight. You exercise and you eat less.
You know? Yeah. Chapter one, eat less.
This is chapter two,
exercise
more. You know, and so in the same way, how do I get better at taking pictures? Take more pictures. That's it. You know what I mean? Like, just keep taking pictures. And you will naturally flow in the direction that your mind wants to go in. Are you going to hit places where you get stuck? Yes. You know what you do? You keep taking pictures. Right? You know, we can go on the show and talk about how we break through our creative blocks. And yes, I have my ways of doing it. And you have your ways of doing it. And Alan Bailward has his way of doing it. But that is meaningless. My ways of doing it should be largely meaningless to you and vice versa. You have to find your own way. Now, if taking a little bit of what I do, oh, I'm going to stay up late like Bill does. And like Jeffrey, I'm only going to shoot when I feel like shooting or whatever. Great. If that works for you, super, you know, you agree?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that, you know, you can have a catch-all of saying, do this.
Right.
You know, I know people that are very much morning people, and I'm typically not. I typically do better at night.
However, you wake up early.
I do.
You know, you said your alarm didn't go off this morning. I thought you woke up naturally early.
I usually do.
Okay, I was just
saying. Sleep has been a little fleeting.
Okay.
Last few weeks.
Okay. Just fair enough. I just was wondering.
Just stuff, you know.
Sure. Stuff going on in your head.
Yep.
I understand. So yeah, I don't know. Is that a fair answer?
Yep, I think it is.
Okay. What's this show at Annenberg?
Oh, the next show. Yeah, I'm really excited about this. The next show at the Annenberg Space for Photography in here in LA is 125 years of National Geographic, which I'm so excited for this. And the Annenberg Space is a really beautiful space. It starts on the 26th and runs through April 27th. More than 500 images will be part of this show.
Wow, 500?
That's what they say.
That's a lot of pictures.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine some slideshows will be involved. I don't think they've got the space to hang 500 images.
You know what I'm really not into being is a miner in Africa.
Not so much.
Whew. Like these, like, you know what? It's those, like these diamond mines and mm-hmm, that kind of stuff mm-hmm. makes me never, ever going to buy a diamond in my life. I think it just, oh, it's awful.
It's sad.
It's an awful business.
Yeah.
Jewelry makes me feel icky. Unless it's like, you know, handmade from materials you dug up or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea of like these precious jewels, precious metals, this is a bad business, bad juju in there.
But this shot of Nepalese workers carrying a car across the river.
You know, there are a bunch of beautiful pictures in here. I like the ones of the mountaineers in the Swiss Alps from the 1820s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love the idea that, you know, before 1853 or whatever it is. Yeah, look at that car going across. 1853, we had never been to the top of Everest, you know? You know?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was looking at this seal.
Or 1953, seal. Rather. What were you looking at, a seal? Oh, the seal coming up? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one. It's good stuff. Amazing stuff. The woman with the horse tying it up, like where the
silly. The cowgirl. Yeah. So yeah, I'm very excited about this. The last show, the Helmut Newton show, was amazing. It was really, really good.
Is that a big space? I've never actually been.
It's not a big space. And that's the thing, is they make such great use of it. It's not a huge space. They do have now across the kind of quad area, there's another facility that has it's basically like a where they show films. Like they're showing, I think, Who Shot Rock and Roll Now, the film there.
Yeah.
So they've got kind of two spaces for different purposes, but it's just really well designed. It's a circular space there that they can show films in the center, and then the outer sort of hallway area has two surfaces that they can put photographs on.
That's okay. Next time I'm out there, we're going.
Yeah, it's a nice space.
They wrote me once asking about some of my work, and I sent in a CV and a bunch of work, and I never heard anything back. I should make a point of calling them up.
Hey, you should. That would be pretty amazing to get your work seen there.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, so you put these two articles in here.
Uh huh.
One of them is again from The Guardian about Lee Ladar's photographs of his mother having sex with younger men.
Right.
This is art.
That's what they tell me. I just don't know about this. You know, it's they reference things like Nan Golden and Larry Clark.
You know how I love Nan Golden.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess is this one of the situations of just because we can, or what is the value in this? Is it?
I would say the question is up the top. They said, "Is he just out to shock?"
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Look, pushing boundaries is always where things get interesting. The question is if the boundaries of things like sex in our society have been pushed to the point where it just feels like pandering.
And that's kind of the conclusion that I'm coming to with this is where, first of all, where's the elevation?
Right.
And I do believe that at least one of the goals of art should be to elevate. Yeah. Elevate us.
I would agree with that, but there's a lot of people who would say no way. Art is supposed to garner a reaction, not necessarily a positive one.
I did say one of.
Okay.
It's not, I don't believe it's the sole. Oh,
I thought you meant that it needed at least a dash of that.
I don't think it needs to, but I think for me, that's what I'm looking for.
Art is inverse entropy. Right? Like I want to make something more of something that's falling apart.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So what are we saying here by taking pictures of your mom having sex with younger men?
That's what I'm not seeing. And I've been looking at these for a couple of days and trying to get beyond my initial reaction, and I'm having a tough time getting beyond my initial
reaction.
Apparently
his mother was, she put in ads weekly in Seattle saying, looking for a generous, wealthy husband who wants his own private dancer.
Mm-hmm.
So his mom has serious issues anyway.
Right.
So by recording his parents' serious issues, you know, who's the guy from the 70s who took all the pictures of his parents, like the golf swing and his mother sitting on the edge of the bed? You know what I'm talking about?
Kind of in Palm Springs.
Yeah, they featured him in the Genius of Photography thing.
And I can't remember his name.
All right, we're going to have to look that up. But you know, is it just the next step from that?
Kind of, yeah.
I'm recording my own family, and my own family happens to be effed up.
Kind of. But is that
art?
Yeah, is this
well, you know what? It's the kind of stuff that's, hey, got an article in The Guardian, so...
That's true.
And I think that's where the question stops, right? Where it becomes, wait a minute. You know, is it really all about getting press nowadays? Maybe.
I think a good portion of photographers would say yes. Yeah. It is about getting in front of as many people as possible, right, in any way possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know where I fall on that. It seems.
What's the other thing you showed me too?
It does seem kind of pandering. The other thing, and they reference this in the article, is Tierney Guerin's family pictures.
Right, and it's like a young daughter naked, young boy naked on the beach with masks on is like the homepage picture.
Right.
And if you go through them, you know, it's photographs of his son in a ski suit with like...
Her son, rather.
I'm sorry. You know, peeing in the snow, you know, or whatever. And then there's another creepy picture of like her two kids, I guess, in a bathtub with one of the kids with their face like staring at the other one's crotch in a bathtub. It's
odd. And
there's some weird stuff going on here.
The first sort of comparison that I drew was to Sally Mann's immediate family shots, but something about these are different.
What? The Sally Mann ones were, and I'm not saying this was necessarily good or bad, they had a glamour to them.
Mm-hmm.
They had a soft focus. They had a fantastic quality to them. Like, you see what I'm saying? They were almost, they felt like almost fashion photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Of her children, even if her children were naked.
Is it the black and white aspect that's adding to, is color detracting from this and making it somehow more?
I don't think it's the color, but I think that there's a certain level of grit to this
that's not present in the other work.
Yeah, and the grit sort of makes it lean more towards something that you may call pornographic.
Mm-hmm.
Not pornographic, but like, you understand what I'm trying to say?
I think I do.
Not pornographic, just sensational.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What
are we seeing here? Are we seeing a difference in intent? Is that what's driving this? Is the intent here more,
I don't know.
Shocking or illicit in that way, or explicit? I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but I'm having a much different reaction to this work which is arguably the same subject matter, or at least similar subject matter.
Yeah.
Than the immediate family work.
Yeah, you know, and again, if this was a man taking these pictures, not a woman, would that change the way people
would
saw
that? I think it would.
If Terry Richardson took these pictures, he would be arrested.
Yes, and well, Terry Richardson probably has taken these kind of pictures.
Yeah, good point.
You know, but yeah, I think is there some aspect of getting a pass because it's a mother taking pictures of her children, not a father?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I feel like there would be. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that there's generally a deference towards mothers over fathers in general in society, you know, when it comes to custody and all that kind of stuff too.
I mean, it's interesting. I find myself looking at them. I don't just, you know, dismiss them and say it's nothing. But
well, then some people would say that that is why they are successful.
Mm-hmm. More so than the previous ones of the mother, you know, having sex. Those
are gritty, and that's the worst part of Nan Golden. That it's like, okay, your mother's like whoring herself out to like random young guys. Like, that's good. Why don't you put down the camera and try to help your mom?
Yeah, right. That's kind of where I'm like, yeah. Really?
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know where I got, you know, let us know what you think, guys. Go check
both out. Of these are
I'm
going to
put the
notes.
Links in the show notes and you can decide for yourself.
Yep.
New York Times put out an article about self-portraits, selfies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they have the picture of Vivian Mayer. What is that? What is the classic photo of what's her name with the Leica with the mirror tilted, so it's like the profile and the straight shot. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Who is that? Now that I don't remember who that is.
Yeah.
But I do like that one. I also like the one of Avedon where he's got his rolly.
Yes. Yes. And then there's the one of Avedon where he's like kind of fluffing his own hair.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
like the classic mm-hmm. one. So are self-portraits important? Yes. I never take good self-portraits.
Do you not?
No, not really. I don't like the way I look in them. Although a lot of the pictures that I have taken, I guess, were self-portraits. So, you know.
Wait, I think my favorite portrait view, I don't think it's a self-portrait. It's the one of you on the balcony at that townhouse overlooking the river where you're shooting Katrina
Eugenia. Yeah.
Favorite picture of you?
Yes. Claude took that one, but what we were doing is trying to emulate a picture of somebody else that was taken there.
Right.
So it was cheating a little bit. But
if is that a selfie? If does it have to be you?
Yeah,
pulling the trigger,
pressing the button,
or are you just setting it up and say, now, okay, I'm going to do this. You just stand here. Is that still a selfie? What's the qualification?
Yeah, I don't know. I have thought about that myself. And I come down on both sides of it. Like even sometimes I'll set things up and then have, by the way, it's Bernie Abbott who did that picture.
Ah, Bernice Abbott. Yep. Okay.
I have done that myself where I've set it up and said, hey, Heather, you know, take the picture or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And Heather's a fine photographer, but she's not a photographer, you know?
Right.
But if she takes the picture, I mean, theoretically the copyright is hers if she presses the button. The problems I have with setting up, you know, trying to get the focus right and okay, you can use a stand in and then you're in the right place and then it's hard to tell the framing and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
The point this article is making is how the whole idea of self-portraits, especially the stuff in the mirror or arm's length portraits of yourself, are all the thing, you know, all the rage.
Right. With the trout pout lips and all that.
Right. And to me, it's kind of like, okay, yes, people taking pictures of themselves is great because you don't always have somebody take pictures of you. But at the same time, comparing that picture of Vivian Mayer or the one of Bernie Abbott that we just talked about to a picture of you with your cell phone at arm's length, I think those are two different things.
Very different animals. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In the same way that Sally Mann's pictures are not family snapshots.
Right.
You know?
Right. They are family pictures, family portraits, but yeah, I agree.
So, Yeah, that's a cool picture. You know what I also noticed too? There was a picture in an article we're going to look at in a minute, which we might as well just throw up now, of Robert Capa.
Mm-hmm.
And
On the Lens blog.
On the Lens blog, actually came out this morning. I added it to the list. And there's a few audio interviews from 1947 with Capa, where he talks about how he changed his name and how he took the Falling Soldier picture in Spain and all the rest of it. And down the bottom, there's a picture of him with John Steinbeck in a mirror from behind. And it's Capa like looking down into a little rolly. And what kills me about it is the idea that the nice thing about those cameras, like the rollies and Hasselblads where you're looking down into it, is that you can still see you even though you're taking the picture. Like the camera's not in front of your face.
Right. Right, I like that.
You know,
I do too.
I really wish that, you know, like all those old Nikon F, like the F4, you could swap out the viewfinder for a top down, couldn't you?
Yeah, you can swap out the prism from the F.
I don't know why they don't do that with the digital ones at all.
Especially if
ones
they
for
are
portrait people and that kind of stuff.
Put it like a 3-inch, you know, make, I guess some of them do the articulating screen.
Yeah.
On the back, which is similar.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to see something like that, a waist level finder on a digital.
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll put those in the show notes. Hey, we're going to mix this up a little bit because speaking of Capa.
Yeah.
There's a picture that somebody put in. I think somebody put it up in the group or something. It was an article about this picture of this little girl dead on the ground in Haiti. She survived the earthquake, but then she ended up getting the police ended up shooting her while she was running away for looting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a picture of her on the ground with these other guys looting in the background, just walking by her.
Right.
And it's a very tragic picture. It won Picture of the Year in Sweden. This guy, Paul Hansen, who took the photo. And it's a great photograph in the sense of this like war stuff, right?
Yes.
But here's the thing. Scroll down on the page and there's a picture of all of the photographers taking pictures of the dead girl. Like so many paparazzi.
Yeah, right. There's like 7 or 8 of them just sort of huddled around her.
Yeah.
Trying to get the shot.
Yeah.
It's really strange. It's
disturbing.
That shot looks staged or some part of you hopes that it is staged.
Yes.
Because they're vultures.
I don't think it is.
No, it's I don't think it is. Either,
I think the same thing happened this weekend on Saturday. Heather and I went out to see with Cisco, actually went out to see a band play. Heather's old friend of Heather's was tour managing this band who was playing at CMJ, which is like the big music festival annual thing, trying to show off new bands, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we went and saw this band and there's all these like photographers coming in and up at the front and they're taking pictures and, you know, there's like 53 photographers and you can tell they're all freelance and they all go and they'll shoot every band at CMJ on the off chance that one of them becomes famous and they can sell the pictures.
Oh, wow.
Like that's kind of, it's essentially like one step removed from paparazzi.
Huh.
You know? It's not at all the kind of work that I would ever want to do, but I found it interesting, you know, in the same way that this is, it's sort of a mild version of this, you know?
Okay.
I don't know. It's very upsetting to me. This is why I know wars need to be seen. And I understand that war photographers are important, but there's a fine line between being there to record what happens and being there to become famous because you took a picture of what happened.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
I don't, you know, the famous photographers in the 50s, I guess, you know, even in the 60s, like even, what's the guy who took the picture of the Vietnamese, the South Vietnam guy about to shoot? No. Oh, or the napalm shot. I was going to say the one where he's about to blow the guy's head off.
Oh, right. With the pistol off to the side.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, did the general public knew those pictures, but did the general public know who those photographers were?
The photographers, I don't believe, were as famous as the photographs, no.
Right. Where nowadays, I don't know. There's something about it that makes me feel awkward. But maybe it's just because it's not at all the kind of pictures that I take. But I think that Like, but you know what? If you're there and you see this thing that is such a beautiful picture, why shouldn't you be able to make the picture?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I stand.
But at some point, I mean, you've got the seven or eight photographers around this girl. I think my reaction, at least sitting here now, is what am I going to offer that one of those seven aren't?
Yeah, but who's to say that yours isn't there? The one that gets picked up?
But is that... yeah.
It becomes a more moral question, not a...
Right.
You know what my reaction would be? The reaction of that guy in the white shirt, the black guy in the white shirt in the background, who's just like, what the f*** is wrong with you? Oh, excuse me. What the F is wrong with you people?
Yeah. Bleep.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 It's very surreal. It's very strange.
Yes. Anyway, just putting that out there.
Yes.
One last thing. Apparently, there's a mayoral election coming up in New York City. And
still, I thought you guys decided that already.
No, we just decided who the nominees were going to be.
Ah, okay.
It's a big city. It's kind of like a country.
Man, you guys take forever.
The Republican nominee, Joe Loda, is putting out basically a scare campaign saying that if you vote for the other guy, de Blasio, who happens to live around the corner from me. It's pretty funny. We went out the other morning to get some breakfast, and de Blasio and his wife are just strolling by holding hands.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then like going, like walking around the block and,
group with them. No entourage.
No
just
group,
the two of
no
them.
Entourage, but 20 feet behind, guy with a piece in his ear.
Okay.
So there's like a Secret Service guy watching him and his wife as they walk down the street. It was just kind of neat. Anyway, this Loda, the Republican, is basically saying, using scare tactics to say, if you vote for the Democratic guy, New York will go back to how it was in the 70s and 80s when crime was high and riots and violence and whatever. And to do that, he made a campaign, an ad, using all kinds of photographs, including at least one by this guy named Weber. What's his first name? Matt Weber. And he's just like, I never authorized anybody to use this picture. And apparently... you know, he was just, they said that the campaign, the guy who put the pictures in the ad said the campaign just sent him a website with cool pictures from New York City in the 70s and 80s.
Mm.
And the picture must have been there. He insisted that his team searched for credits, but when they couldn't find any credit, they just used the photo. But for what it's worth,
they just figured that, appeared here.
And this Gothamist article said, for what it's worth, when we uploaded our version of Weber's photo to Google image search, his website was among the first three hits.
Oh, see.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, and apparently many photographers have been screwed by his campaign. They list a whole bunch of photographers whose pictures were also used without whatever. And I guess this, I bring this up because it's crappy that he did this, but I also bring it up because you never know where your photos are going to be used if you sell them for stock.
Right.
You know, what was that other article that came up a few weeks ago? The girl was in the ad and she got,
the girl's, her portrait was used in an HIV ad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she herself is not HIV positive, but there's ads all over the place that say, you know, when you're HIV positive, and it's like her standing there under the copy.
Right.
You know, and not to say that there's anything wrong or embarrassing about being HIV positive, except that there are a lot of people out there who are really weird about that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, like, everyone thinks that you are HIV positive when she maybe goes on a date or, you know what I mean, whatever.
Right.
So it's fun, or your picture of, you know, a burnt car from 1974 New York City gets used in a political ad for for the guy that you're against.
Right, right.
You know?
So a lot of times if you're doing stock photography or putting photography out there to be purchased, you don't necessarily get to control how it's used and the intent in which it's used. Yeah. And it may be very different.
One of my Gladwell pictures was on the cover of this Costco magazine this month. And, you know,
yeah, I saw that. How does that happen?
Am I pro Costco? No, but you know, the publishers purchased the rights to use it for, it's funny. It's like, in many ways, a Costco magazine isn't really editorial usage as much as it is. It's more like a catalog.
Sure.
You know, they did purchase another picture from me for the interior, but the one that's on the cover was gotten theoretically through Little Brown based upon the deal that they and I worked out. But like, I mean, that's a very light example, but like, if I had a real problem with Costco, there's nothing I can do about that.
No.
You know, I mean, I think people shouldn't buy bulk of anything really, but,
not a big fan of the bulk.
I just think that it ends up being very wasteful for most people.
You know? 68 rolls of toilet paper.
Exactly. Well, toilet paper you're going to use eventually, but you know, 16 pounds of bacon, you
know. 42 quart jars of mayonnaise.
Yeah, right. It's like, no, you will never use that much mayonnaise before it goes bad, or
and
you
if
die.
You do, yeah,
or you die of a coronary.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing.
Yes.
Hey, we got one. We got to talk about one more sponsor before we get to our
you know what
for the week.
This is going to be, this is where you live because, you know, you've got 42 URLs. You're the Costco of URLs.
Yes, I am.
You've got 42 URLs and they're all using HostGator.
I do. They're all on HostGator. HostGator is a premier web hosting provider. Look, if you need a server to put up your site that you've built or you've had somebody build for you or you've been using for years or you want to use WordPress, put up a WordPress site, HostGator is a great way to do that. You can start a web, if you want to start a website, HostGator can help you get started. They have monthly hosting plans, one-click installs of things like WordPress and a bunch of other features. They get you up and running quickly and easily.
Let's take a look at this. I'll tell you what they've got.
If you're a more advanced user, you can actually do reseller plans or VPS or dedicated servers if you need that kind of stuff. They guarantee 99.9% uptime, no matter what your size or needs. Their one-click install of WordPress is great. And when you go with HostGator, unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, free site builder tools that are super easy to use. They got 24/7 support if you have any questions. But HostGator is pretty good. How much do they charge for these things, Jeffrey?
They've got plans. They've got plans right now. They've got a birthday sale going on.
Okay.
They've got plans starting at $250 a month, $248 to be precise.
It's crazy.
For a month. Yeah.
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 So head over to HostGator.com to learn more. When you decide to purchase, don't forget to use the coupon code PICTURES10, as in pictures October, PICTURES10, and you'll get 30% off that $2.48.
Oh, my God. Okay, but
here's the thing. That code will work for the whole month of October. But if you're looking to switch web hosts for some reason, HostGator is running a special right now. Visit HostGator.com, use the code SWITCHITUP, and you get 50% off. But here's the thing. That offer code ends today.
Oh.
So if you listen to this show today and you were thinking of switching hosts, you know, you're with one of those other guys from England or Europe or Barbados, and you're like, you know what?
Barbados?
I want my servers to be in Texas.
Where did you pull Barbados from?
I don't know, somewhere else. go use this code, switch it up. You get 50% off. That's crazy. Yeah. I'm going to switch it up. Can I move from HostGator to HostGator
and
use the code
switch it up? Yeah. Yeah. Tired of your web server being in Kampuchea?
Yeah.
Switch to HostGator.
And look, HostGator, they're really good people. I've never had a problem with them. I've been with them for 8 years.
Yeah. Well, they've got over 9 million or something, 10 million or something domains that they're hosting.
They're a big, serious host.
They're not going anywhere.
They're not fly by night. No.
Yeah. No, they're not going anywhere.
If you need like a basic thing where you log in with FTP and, you know, you add a new folder and you can just get to that folder on the web and don't need a crazy giant CMS behind it, HostGator's where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff. And we thank them very much for their support of On Taking Pictures in 5x5. Who do you got? You chose the photographer of the week this week. What do you got?
Well, we didn't really even talk about it. I just made a suggestion.
I think it's good.
Okay. All right. Paul Nicklin.
And he's one of the guys from the National Geographic, no?
He does shoot for National Geographic. If you don't recognize the name, you may recognize his photographs. He was the one who did the photographs of like penguins and seals, and had the seal. The one seal was bringing him penguins as if to feed him. Did you ever hear this story?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So wildlife photographer.
I like the shot of the manatee underwater. It's like, you know, the manatee's just like, please, no more pictures.
Right? Just like turning away slightly.
But he's so slow and manatee-like that he's like, oh, dude, all right, just chill.
Just one more while I turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, polar bears, penguins, manatee, just a really, really wonderful photographer.
The picture of him on his about page where he's in the water in the Arctic.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hell with that.
Yeah, it's yeah. He's just peering out of
an ice of the ice.
Yeah, yeah. Think of immersing yourself in a Slurpee, and that's where he's at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
I get that you have
that's
a wetsuit.
Dedication.
Yeah, I get that you have a wetsuit,
but it's still cold.
Your lips and cheeks and everything.
Yep.
Yeah. No bueno.
Yeah, he uses all Canon gear apparently. Whole bunch of, you know, I love any photographer who goes from a 28 millimeter or a 16 millimeter zoom, right, all mm-hmm. the way up to a 600 millimeter
yeah
telephoto lens.
Yeah,
that's a serious guy.
So take a look. He's got under the stories page on his website, he links to a bunch of different stories on National Geographic. One of them is this seal story. But the guy's been everywhere, you know, exotic locales, fantastic photographs. I love this kind of photography. I couldn't do it, but I do love looking at it.
Yeah. I have a thing about manatees. I like manatees. You like manatees?
I think they're neat looking. Yes.
Yeah, there's something about when we used to go down in Florida and there'd always be like the no wake zones and manatee area, slow down and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were almost all extinct at one point, and they sort of have grown back, come back over time, which is really cool.
Kind of from the brink.
Yeah, they're like sea cows, right? Isn't that what mm-hmm. they say?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of the manatee. Wonder what the numbers are here. Let's see. Apparently, they're now on the threatened list. Oh, they're way off where they were. Apparently, the conservation has worked.
So here is a little Q&A. He's talking to National Geographic magazine, and they ask him what was the quirkiest experience during this assignment of photographing these seals. And he says, Antarctic summer is the one time a year for leopard seals to really gorge themselves on chubby penguins. Late in the day, the seals just play with the penguins, put them on the ice, release them multiple times, then take them down by their feet. If the penguin looked weak, the seal would take it back up to the surface and revive it. It was like a toy for them, like a cat playing with a mouse or a dog playing with a toy.
It's kind of messed up.
Right? One seal brought a penguin over to me. I didn't touch it. I just sat there and photographed. The penguin took off. The seal grabbed it, brought it back to me, and put it on my camera dome again. Eventually, the seal got upset and just started blowing bubbles at me. It was the most fascinating interaction I've had. So here's this sort of killer seal trying to say, here, eat this, you know, manja, you know.
He's like, you're in my home. You eat my food.
Right.
You don't want to break bread with me.
Yeah. Who are you?
Yeah. That's, you know, I always find it odd. I mean, even when you see domesticated animals and you're sitting there like looking at a cat or a dog and sitting there petting or whatever it is, and they're just looking at you, they're like, the heck is going on in their brain right now?
Yeah.
Are they like, oh, cool, any sure. Concept? Yeah, like that manatee. Please, no more pictures.
Right. You're kind of hung up on the manatee.
I like them. they make me happy.
Yes.
I
would like to go diving just so I could say, oh, the huge manatee.
I think that you, you know, I think you could probably get Paul Nicklin to come on the show.
I think he'd be fascinating to talk to.
Yeah, I think you should give him a call.
I'm going to add him to my list document that you have inspired me to make.
You mean the one like mine at BillWadman.com/the list?
That is the one. Soon there may be JeffreySidoris.com/the list.
Yeah, if you can get past the giant bio section. Hey, where can people find the show notes? Where is that? 5by5.tv/OTP/78
/78 is this week.
That will get you to the show notes for this week. If you just go to 5by5.tv/OTP, you'll get to the main page where you can find all of our show episodes, including links to the iTunes store to subscribe or subscribe in your favorite podcast agent. I use Downcast personally on the iOS.
I use what do I use? Podcaster? No, what do I use?
I've forgotten.
I don't know, and I don't know where my phone is. All right. I don't use that. I use something else.
Look, if you want to write us a podcast at ontakingpictures.com.
Pocket Cast. That's the one I use.
Okay, use Pocket Cast. Like all the cool kids.
That's right.
Write us at podcast@ontakingpictures.com. That gets to Jeffrey and I.
Yes.
We are on the Twitters. Jeffrey is JeffreySadDoris on Twitter. I'm at Bill Wadman. And what else we got? What's the phone number? Do you know what the phone number is offhand?
The phone number, it is area code 347-687-9411, 347-687-9411.
And you can leave us a message and maybe we will use it on the show. Anything else?
I don't think so.
I will be here.
No, you're going to be gone.
Well, I'm going to be here next week. I leave Thursday or Tuesday evening. We'll do an early show. We're gonna do an early show and record as I'm off, and then I get back. I think on Wednesday, so maybe we'll record on like Thursday the following week.
Sounds good. We'll do a wrap up of your trip.
Yeah, we'll talk about the trip a little bit, and if anybody has any recommendations, one last thing, we've gotten some emails from people who are either have been to Italy on trips and recommendations, or one woman who lives in Italy west of. Of Venice gave us some recommendations on restaurants that she and her husband
I saw that.
Really
that
liked.
Was very sweet of her.
It was very sweet. So we need to, I wanted to thank everyone for that. And if you have any more ideas, let us know. And between then and now, let's go take some pictures.
Yes. We'll see you next time. Have a good week.
Bye. Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say.